So let's go back to the 91 bill and explain what was the mentality that pushed that through. And you talked about it, called it a prove it first bill. Others have talked about it just being a flat out moratorium. What was the effect of that bill? And then kind of like bringing us up to the most recent overhaul and the new mining bill. So kind of that timeline of our legislative history here.
Yeah. So, you know, so that bill was, you know, it was referred to at the time as a moratorium. And, you know, functionally, it was never a moratorium. To be clear, the tenets of the bill could have been met by the industry. It simply required that the industry come up with example mines to demonstrate, you know, that metallic sulfide mining could be done safely. And it simply required one mine that had operated safely for 10 years without environmental damage, and a second mine that had been closed and reclaimed without causing damage. And it was a compromise. It allowed a company to propose two different mines when, in fact, we're, you know, that's not really a complete mine proposal, one that's operated safely and one that's been closed, that's also been closed safely. The origin of the bill was basically came out of the fact that as we researched metallic sulfide mining across the US and Canada, we couldn't find safe examples. And so it became sort of a challenge to the industry, you know, put your money where your mouth is. If you really are proposing to do this in a way that's safe, show where it's been done before. And I think that's a common sense approach to allowing a pretty damaging industry to get established in Wisconsin. So it was really more meant to be a challenge to the industry, but also a way to educate the public. And to be honest, I don't think, you know, any of us thought that there was a chance that the bill would pass, but in fact it did. And I think that was in part because the legislature did realize and did understand that it was a compromise and that it could be met at some point. What is interesting, just to fast forward all the way to present day, is that there is a similar bill moving forward in the Minnesota legislature, a prove it first bill that is modeled after Wisconsin's. It's slightly different, but it's essentially functions as the same. And a study was done, the folks that are behind the bill in Minnesota commissioned a study in 2023 that examined mines, example mines that the mining industry itself has proposed in Minnesota to meet their version of Prove It First. The study found that all of them have had issues, all of them have had major environmental issues, and none of them would meet the qualifications required in Minnesota's version of Prove It First. That's modern day. That's, you know, that's amazing to us that here, 30 plus years later, you know, the mining industry is still not able to demonstrate that they can mine safely in metallic sulfides. So, you know, our version, you know, really didn't hold up the industry. There's no reason why they couldn't meet the law. It didn't function as a moratorium, only insofar as they didn't have examples that could meet the law, despite it being a compromised law to begin with. So during the Governor Walker administration in 2017, it was repealed. And this had been a major goal of the industry all along. And then since then, of course, now it's taken a few years for a new company, in this case, the Canadian junior mining company, Greenlight Metals, to come to Wisconsin and to try to line up as many of the potential deposits here as possible.
So how would you describe our current mining law? I mean, how strong is it? What are some of the weaknesses in it? And, you know, what? Why did it take this long? I mean, it was passed almost a decade ago, or years ago.
Well, you know, in terms of the delay before a company came back after Prove It First was repealed in 2017, I think the major factor there is that this isn't a true mining company that has come back into the state to try to get Bend off the ground or at least explore Bend to the point where they can determine whether or not it's even economic to go after as a full mine proposal. What it does reflect is that Greenlight Metals is not a mining company. It's a so-called junior mining company, which means that these are basically investors investing in this company to try to round up as many potential deposits here and keep them from the competition, with hopes of being bought up by an actual mining company or merging with an actual mining company. Junior mining companies are basically speculators, and they're playing with Canadian investors' money while risking none of their own to try to develop the Bend deposit. I know this is a little aside from your question, but I think it's important to recognize that Greenlight Metals is operating on a very small budget, and part of the reason that they were the first, part of the reason that they didn't come back right away after 2017, after Prove It First was repealed, was that they're fighting for they're a small fish in a big pool of these speculators, mostly Canadian junior mining companies, who are all fighting for some kind of investment money to go after and try to explore deposits like Bend, Bend that wasn't considered an economic deposit in the past.
Well, I guess let's go back to the law from 2017. What is the current law?
Yeah, so Prove It First here was repealed. So that would have been the Prove It First law would have made a mining company as a permit condition, demonstrate a mine that had operated safely for 10 years and demonstrate another mine that had operated safely, metallic sulfide mine that had closed safely for 10 years. So that law has been repealed. And in the same bill that repealed the Prove It First law, wetlands protections related to mining permits were gutted. The public has been cut out of the permitting process, making challenges of mining permits much, much more difficult, putting the onus or the burden of proof on the public and taking it off the back of the industry to prove that their permits meet state law. So they've pulled down some hurdles that were, barriers or things that were more difficult to deal with for the mining industry when trying to get permits. And that comes on the heels of other loss of protections that were enacted during the Walker administration in the 2010s, where we saw restrictions and protections for groundwater being eroded at the time. And the other thing that is important to note is that it's more than just state law that's being gutted currently. The current federal administration is now going after the Endangered Species Act and trying to gut that. There is a new rule moving forward that would remove as much as 80% of the United States wetlands from protections under the Clean Water Act. That's a huge blow to protections, and it's a major hurdle for the mining industry to overcome, especially in Wisconsin, where we are a water-rich state, and where wetlands are just a natural treasure. They filter our water. They filter our groundwater. They're important habitat that we can't really afford to lose. So at the same time that we've lost some state protections, now we're seeing increasing pressure on the federal side to remove hurdles to help support the growth of the mining industry. And what's ironic in all of this, especially coming from the federal side, is that a lot of the removal of federal protections are being done under the guise of promoting and propping up the mining industry, at the same time that this administration is doing all it can to attack renewable energy development, which is something that drives the increased demand for metals. So there's deep irony in how the current federal administration is approaching propping up the mining industry.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of permitting any of this stuff that's happening on the Bend deposit, for example, it's in the national forest, it's in the ceded territory, so there's tribal issues, it's state and there's federal. How many different steps or stages would there be to go through to actually permit a mine?
Yeah, it gets complicated insofar as we have both federal regulators and state, you know, regulators, the DNR doing the reviews for this.
Greenland, who would be the ultimate decider there?
Yeah, so this gets complicated. Because the deposit is on public land in the National Forest, the ultimate decision will rest with, it actually rests with both agencies, both the federal and state agencies. And so there will be a certain amount of cooperation, but their permitting processes differ, and the requirements for, to approve a permit or deny a permit are slightly different. So they're, you know, it's a little bit unusual, to have both jurisdictions in this case. The Bureau of Land Management will be, along with the Forest Service, will be the federal decision makers, and the state DNR would be also a decision maker on a permit. So they'll cooperate to a certain extent, but it'll ultimately be different processes. But we're years away from any kind of permit decision on Bend. There's not even a permit application to conduct actual mining so far. Greenlight Metals is only at the exploration stage still at Bend, and they have a long ways to go to even prove that there's an economic deposit there, that it's economically feasible for them to mine it. And they have to prove that under Canadian regulatory, especially securities regulatory rules that protect investors and stockholders.
Okay. So it's actually two different federal governments they'd have to deal with in that sense.
Yeah, on the financial side, they have to satisfy Canadian regulatory authorities. But Canada doesn't have any control or regulatory authority over environmental side of permitting.
Okay. Right. So one of the arguments that we've heard is that mining, especially in Wisconsin, but in the United States, is important because of national security risks, that because we need these precious metals, because they go into renewable resource, whether it's wind tower turbines or solar panels or cell phones or whatever, getting them here is better than getting them from China or mining that occurs in Africa or any other parts of the world. That seems to be a newer persuasion that they're pitching, as opposed to the older one of jobs, jobs, jobs.
Yeah. So the federal government has promoted, so-called mining economic security based on the fact that we do import, a fair amount of our base metals. We also export a fair amount of our base metals, and depending on the metal, those percentages vary. They vary widely. Copper would be the most important base metal at Bend, but I've run the numbers on the total amount of copper that could be produced based on the estimates so far, and it wouldn't even amount to a single percentage point compared to the overall production in the U.S. So something under 1% of total production of copper in the U.S. and only for a short time because it's such a small deposit. So it really wouldn't make a dent, any kind of real dent in the supply of copper. It's important to note that in terms of the value of the deposit at Bend, the amount of precious metals there and the value of the precious metals, the gold and silver, are roughly equal to or probably worth a little bit more now than the value of the copper, based on the estimates from the company itself. And I note that only because, copper and silver are, silver and gold as precious metals are by no means critical minerals that modern society needs to operate. You know, the vast bulk of precious metals, gold and silver, are used for coins, for investment, for jewelry, you know, some small amounts for electronics, but there's certainly no shortage of them. You know, there's an economic incentive for the industry to go after them, obviously, because there's a profit motive. That's, you know, that's simple capitalism. But in terms of the amount of minerals that, or metals that a band deposit can produce, it's not going to dent or make any real difference in terms of national security for the United States.
One of the other things they've talked about is the Eagle Mine in the UP. They say that's an example of a safely operating mine.
Yeah. Upers who have looked at the Eagle Mine would beg to differ. There have been some water contamination issues up there. I don't think there's been anything major so far. But again, it, you know, it's still an operating mine. It hasn't been closed yet. And a big chunk of their waste materials have been exported offsite as well, because they process their minerals up closer to Marquette in a former iron mine. So we won't know the full impact of the Eagle Mine itself and then its, you know, offsite wastes, you know, for some time to come.
Has it been open for 10 years? What do you mean? Is it, how close is it to qualifying under, if the old prove-it law is in place?
Yeah, it's
good to being one of the examples.
That's actually a good question. I don't think they've operated for 10 yet. I want to say 7 or 8. Yeah, I'd have to check.
Okay, but nothing so far that would be disqualifying under that, or would the?
Yeah, well, so if we apply the old, you know, our version of prove it first law to something like the Eagle Mine, actually, it probably would have been disqualified by now, because any kind of water contamination would have counted towards whether or not it was successful. And I think that was the goal of the Prove It First law in the first place, was, you know, if the industry is actually operating safely, then it shouldn't have contamination issues. It shouldn't be spilling any kind of toxics. It shouldn't have water quality issues. And so if, you know, if something like the Eagle Mine is having water quality issues, or has demonstrated that it's not been able to safely handle its wastewater and is causing contamination, then no, it shouldn't apply, you know, when you overlay something like a prove it first law on it.
And would that evidence be in like the Michigan DNR, or where, for some of the contamination issues?
Yeah, generally, so they may not have been cited, and that I think would be the legal requirement, would be some sort of citation, so an environmental enforcement action of some sort. That I actually don't know about. Again, you know, I've relied on folks up in the UP to do that monitoring. We haven't had to think about it just because we no longer have a prove it first law here, and so haven't monitored it quite as closely. But I think that would be the general rule. It would actually have to be an actual enforcement action. The trouble is that this is the case with Michigan mining law and with our mining law as well, is that on a mining property itself, our laws allow companies a certain amount of latitude to pollute on site. It's if the pollution migrates off site is when the enforcement mechanisms start to kick in. So for mining here in Wisconsin, the companies are allowed something like a quarter mile radius. So imagine if you had a perfectly circular tailings dump. You make a quarter mile radius around it, and they're allowed to legally pollute groundwater up to certain levels. The problem for them from an enforcement side comes if that pollution migrates outside of this zone where it's legally permissible.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the exploratory drilling that's happening now, how concerned are you that it's actually happening? Or is it more of a, well, there's no evidence that they'll be able to find anything, they can drill and speculate all they want?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. the current drilling, the exploration drilling that, that Greenlight Metals is doing at Bend is designed to determine whether or not there is enough ore there for this thing to ultimately be feasible, you know, economically feasible as a proposal. And so that this is sort of the basic first step before you'd ever see a mine permit application. So there's a new round of drilling coming up this winter. Assuming it's permitted, the company has proposed up to 20 new exploration holes, as far as I know. Whether or not that's even enough yet to demonstrate feasibility is unknown. They're going to have to go through a round of testing. It's going to take some time period to work through that. I guess our concern with somebody like Greenlight is if Bend proves to be feasible economically for the company to develop, their business model depends on developing multiple or you know more sites besides Bend. They have a very small gold mine or gold deposit called Reef in Marathon County. They have some exploration prospects in the town of Shepke in Oneida County, in the headwaters of the Wolf River. They've not done any drilling, or they've done limited drilling there. A subsidiary did a limited number of holes there a few years ago. So they think they have some targets. But their business model, you know, Greenlight Metals will fail if it only has a Bend deposit to develop. It's simply not big enough, and it's not high grade enough for you know, a single company to exist on. So their business model depends on multiple projects across the state. And you know, they're keen to try to prove that you know, that they can make a go of it as a company developing these multiple projects. That's what concerns us about this first step with the exploration, is that if they somehow prove that Bend can be possibly, you know, economic for them, it will embolden them to, you know, get more investor money to do additional drilling elsewhere, you know, and potentially, you know, potentially discover new deposits. So, you know, this is all years out. This is a baby step for the company. They're nowhere near proving that this thing, that Bend is economic. But it's concerning to us because, you know, that potential, and they've described it as a potential mining district across northern Wisconsin, is deeply concerning. Every potential proposal results in risk to the environment, to air, to water, to habitat, in multiple locations. And, you know, forever. So, you know, that's concerning to us more as a long-term mm-hmm. view.
In terms of the, if you believe, or if there's a widespread belief that there really will be no way these are all economically feasible, and they're using some Canadian investors' money to go drill a bunch of holes, is it more of the drill to your heart's content, you're never going to find it, or is it we'd rather not know that it is? It's a lot better for no one to know, so we don't have to worry about it. Or is it always like in the back of your mind that like, you know, they may try and really twist it and convince someone that it's worth trying, that we can make it marginally? Or is it the drilling itself? Is that, I mean, obviously it's not the same as a mine, but is it even the drilling the holes as a concern?
Well, you know, there's no question that exploration drilling is not anywhere near as invasive or destructive as a full-scale mine proposal. It's not without risk, you know, and one of the major risks or potential risks is groundwater contamination. You're basically, you know, you're drilling holes that, you know, through our overburden into layers of rock, through aquifers, and so there's the potential for cross-contamination you're drilling through metallic sulfides, for example. So, you know, there can be acid production once you drill a hole through the rock and it's exposed to air and water. Generally, that's not a huge concern just because there are rules for borehole abandonment that require that they be cemented, filled with cement. And as soon as practical, for the companies. So again, it's not super invasive, but there are surface impacts, and if it's done, if it's done poorly, and we've seen examples of that in the UP just a few years ago, huge rutting, traffic problems with trucking, bringing drill rigs into the woods, just making a huge mess. So if you get an irresponsible operator, you can make a lot of damage from exploration. But so we rely on the regulators to hopefully monitor that as well as possible, and we try to monitor as well to make sure that the companies are doing their absolute best not to cause issues while they're doing this drilling. It's a legal activity. There's very little recourse for the public, let alone the regulators, to actually halt the activity. Provided they meet the minimal restrictions that are in place for it. There's always a long-term concern, but again, going back to the history of mining here, where we had major companies, major oil companies, major mining companies with deep pockets, fail to find significant deposits other than the handful that have been already identified. It's hard to imagine that the industry is going to be successful at this, but that doesn't seem to keep them from trying, and it doesn't seem to keep investors from being willing to speculate and take risks on, potentially finding something big.
So
we'll switch cards real
okay.
quick.
I mean, with that.